it seems like it's like it's advertising this domination,
borderline abusive behavior in a way,
an abuse based form of raising boys, like, because this is, it really is like a father son kind of a thing, which is that, like, if you harm young boys, they become strong, and if they become strong enough, they become great like you, and if they become great like you, then they're capable of enacting violence on the next generation to make them great. And the movie ends with him coming back tougher, saying "fuck you" to his dad character, and showing that through all of this pain that he was put through, he became so great that he's now perfect and he can say "fuck you." But it ultimately was about them exchanging that smile of
the nod.
But was like, "I'm finally big enough to beat you. Thank you for making me great." It's like, what kind of lesson is this?
It's a red flag.
Welcome everybody to Waving the Red Flag, the number one dating and movie podcast in the universe. It's your boy Eddie. It's Josh. It's Alvin. Joined today by Macabre Storytelling. How you say it?
We actually, funny enough, I actually don't know. So
you know, I don't even know how to say my own name.
So technically, the way you pronounce it Macabre is macabre.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
It's macabre. What's the R for? That's the bullshit. When I first started the channel, I was pronouncing it on my channel macabre storytelling. Macabre or whatever. Someone commented, it's like, you know, it's not pronounced like that, right? And I was like, what? It's like 6 months in. I'm like,
you 50K subscribers in, saying your own name wrong for months.
The only reason I know it was pronounced macabre is because I watched, like, it was some like PBS special on like Edgar Allan Poe when I was like eight. Yeah.
That's an
Eddie. And that's how they described him. Raven, and I was like,
that motherfucker's macabre. Oh shit. Yeah. McCorn on the cob. Welcome to the podcast. Very nice. what we got on this list here? Okay. Yeah, Mac, do you want to pick between talking about soft boy movies or talking about bromance movies?
Let's do soft boy.
I'm afraid of the dark. I'm afraid of other men. I want to be what intimidates me.
Because I think that's a lot more my wheelhouse. And I've talked occasionally about men's issues. I had history in both like the pickup artist and the red pill sphere. This was
Were you a pickup artist?
Kind of. I mean, I watched a lot of the vids. I used some of the methods. I never went like into that like goofy realm where I was wearing like peacock feather hats.
Are you ready to know the five attraction switches that exist in every woman ubiquitously?
Big top hat made out of.
It was never. Luckily, that feathers. The issue was is that for a lot of guys, when people would try to give them dating advice, it was just brain dead shit. It was like if you have a guy, he's struggling in the dating market. I don't know how to approach women. I don't know how to like, riz her up or whatever. Yeah. I don't know how to introduce myself or get better. And they would genuinely ask people. It's like, okay, so what do I do? And people would just be like, be confident. Just, don't be awkward.
Just and let her know how you feel. I don't think that's the problem. I don't think her knowledge of how you feel is the issue here in any situation.
Be her friend for 6 months and then spring it on her that you're in love with her. That'll go great.
I've been in love with you all my life.
Sure.
Play the long game, buddy.
Play the long game.
So you had all these guys who were like, they had no fucking idea what to do. And then come along these pickup artist guys who were so fucking cringy, but they were the only people offering any sort of tangible advice on how to get guys to, talk to women. And the truth is, and this is, I didn't really get in trouble for it, but I actually kind of defended pickup in the sense, not like there's a lot of toxic shit in there. And I actually think a lot of the pickup artist rhetoric is like the precursor to a lot of red pill stuff we're seeing now, like high value male and
like women as like a distinct species that have rules like a Pokemon and things like that is very strange.
But at least from my perspective, a lot of like pickup artist stuff was just basic social skills catered towards socially inept dudes. When you really broke it down, they were basically telling guys, take a shower, get decently fit, you don't have to have a six pack, just start conversations with like 10 women, get blown the fuck out, and then you realize it's not the end of the world, and then eventually you'll just get better, and eventually your social calibration will improve, your social confidence will improve. But then it kind of gets into like the weird, like you said, Eddie, women as a species. You stop seeing women as individuals and more of like the woman standing in front of you is like the obstacle in your way to getting sex. That's kind of where pickup kind of went wrong. And that's kind of where it got crazy.
It seems like it puts up a wall to where you can't, like the way they talk about it, it seems like you can't get past the like fucking a lot of women stage. like it's purpose built to never actually get to the relationship or like emotional intimacy stage. It's just like,
you're completely right. That was the issue a lot of guys and I had myself, was that a lot of guys thought, hey, I want a girlfriend, so I'm going to go out and like fuck 50 chicks. But then they did that, and then they found a girl they liked, and then they realized that they had no idea how to maintain
back
a relationship.
At zero. It's a good start, though. And that's kind of how. Because I feel like you can't be a girlfriend and boyfriend with somebody that doesn't want to fuck you. Like,
it gets your foot in the door.
You do have to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets your dick in the door. That is true. But
yeah, better
in your instance, did you have to...
You just said that so casual. Like, yeah, just get your dick in the door. Like, I'm going to keep going now. Like, come on.
Did Fresh you, and Fit's going to adopt that one now.
I know, right? Come on, dude. Get your dick in the door.
High value males get their dick in the door. This is
number one alpha male podcast in the world right here.
That is true. That is true. I don't know if you knew that, Mac. We are the most alpha male. Alpha males, theta males, omega, epsilon. We're pretty much all of those, the whole Greek alphabet of male types. But what I was curious about is you said you did it, problems, but you defended it, got in like low-key trouble for defending it. Do you think that is there some if you're saying that the thing is bad, but you're defending it, is there some alternative that you're imagining that's like the good parts without the bad parts, or is there some suggestion that you're making there, or what?
Yeah, so I think, and this is like what's so frustrating with like red pill shit too, because I think underneath all the bullshit, all like the resentment towards women and the misogyny and all like the cringy, there are tangible reasons as to why a lot of young men are attracted to this, or even like Andrew Tate, for as like cringy as he was and all the stupid shit he said. But yeah, I think that there is a way that you can give guys tangible dating tips or like skills on how to improve their dating lives without it constantly revolving around this sort of, because no matter where you go to try and find this advice, it always seemed like it seeped with this resentment towards women, whether it's like modern women or like single mothers, or
I think
it's
a sense of like there's power
modern women, yeah,
modern
exactly.
Females.
Yeah, go to Tokyo.
I said that too early. I was being ironic there. I felt like my tone was unclear. Because I feel like though there is this sense of, I think what men tend to resent, and I feel like I've even had this feeling of like, I'm not in control of how I'm feeling in response to you. Like, you're so attractive that it's like, it's fucking up my brain. I can't concentrate on what I'm doing. I'm thinking about whether or not you like me. And like, lo, I'm just trying to put together my Lego set, but you're like walking past and you're amazing. But I think the issue is like when you make that their problem rather than your problem. But I understand where that impulse to be like, fuck, it's really annoying how much power you have over me for existing. And it's not a particularly strong power, but it's something. So I think that that ends up getting like, the flames of that get fed and it turns into some just an unspoken hatred that they tend to have.
And I think, Matt, I think the biggest issue that I have with a lot of the way men in that sphere talk about relationships with women is that it has such a sense of entitlement, like around it. Like, I'm like, why doesn't anyone want to fuck me? Like, I'm just saying, like, it's never self-reflective. Yeah. It's never looking
right.
At you.
It's never actually, well, wait, why doesn't anybody want to fuck
me? why don't they? And I've said it all the time on this, and I think that like we've gotten to a situation where the playing field has leveled economically, academically, and a lot of men are struggling with having to be likable individuals. And I do think, to Eddie's point, and I think Eddie, I love the fact that you always have these conversations constructively. I do think there's a place where we need to kind of fill in gaps on how men try to become like good partners and how we become people that are desirable and likable and make ourselves worthy of relationships. But I think that starts in circles like what we're doing. I don't necessarily mean like, you know, sure. Like each man is their own individual island where they have to do that kind of stuff. But I think that we can be a place in that too.
You have
but
to
I
have
think,
a community to like, you know, you can't.
Yeah, but
can't
but I think that community,
yourself, you know,
I think that community needs to be male led. I don't think that we should put the onus on.
OK, yeah,
to
yeah,
try
no,
to
agree.
To try to make us better partners in the situations that they're in. Like, absolutely. Men need to do that. And if it's men in community, I'm
that's
going to
be rough.
So here's how I see it. If women are talking about like what makes a good woman, what makes a woman womanly or feminine, they're usually talking about sort of internal things like, you know, being a good, you know, helping your friends, being a good mother, a career. They're usually talking about themselves, their interactions with others. It's more of an internal process. The issue I have with a lot of this red pill stuff is that whether it's Fresh and Fit, Andrew Tate, they'll preach male self-improvement. It's like, hey, here's how to be a better man. But almost all of it, at the root of it, is your worth as a man is dependent on how women perceive you. What makes you a man? It's like, well, if women want to sleep with you. And that's what's so ironic about, like, you have all these guys talking about, like, you know, women ain't shit, you know, women don't matter, women are hoes, yada, yada, yada. And yet it's so clear that so many of these guys, their entire sense of self-worth is built around what women think of them. Whereas if I'm talking to men, if we're talking about, like, how do you become a good man? How do you become a good man or a masculine man? I don't even think I would probably talk about women at all. I would talk more about integrity and honesty and
but they got providing to do with me.
Do you take care of your family? Like, yeah, are you there for me?
Friendships, yeah.
All these like alpha males, their entire identity is based around whether or not women like them or whether they want to fuck them or not. If you're putting your self-worth in complete strangers, that's just a recipe for disaster.
But one thing that I wonder about is that it seems like male self-improvement always turns into some toxic shit. Not always, but it seems like, because even if we remove, because I'm thinking like on this list, we've got like Whiplash, and that's a movie that I've loved. I talked about my love for that movie. I've talked about how like it
changed my life. Yeah.
Oh, wait, did you say that was true for you as well, Alvin?
Yeah, I gave you my list of life changing movies. Whiplash was one of, I mean, Revolutionary Road and Good Will Hunting were also on this movie.
Yes.
Whiplash is definitely up there.
The point that I was getting at just initially is, I think that for Whiplash, you're looking at it and you're going like, this is a way to, I mean, it's basically what we see in like tons of other male movies, which is impossible white man stuff, which is like, how do you go from being a dork, a nerd, a loser, not, you know, unhappy in your life, which a lot of people who are viewing a movie are, like most average folks are not, you know, they're not doing amazingly. They might be doing okay, but they're not doing amazingly. So any movie where you get to watch somebody transform from what you are into something incredible always seems like this huge inspiration. That's why people love Fight Club and shit like that, where it's like you're watching this transformation from a put upon person to being incredible. And I think that's part of the appeal. But the way they portray that transformation is all, it's never like a guy, you know, he starts a garden and finds a nice lady and they become and it goes into a lot. It's always like, and then he started murdering motherfuckers and that's how he became, you know, or he like, even Pursuit of Happiness is like probably the healthiest version of that trope. And it's just like, yeah, he was having to sleep in bathrooms to like get through the hellscape of capitalism in order to feed his baby and be like, get like a middle management job.
A middle management like job in his situation was like a six-figure job in like the 80s though, but your point still stands.
Anyway, yeah, sure.
Yeah, a lot of people that like interpret that from like Fight Club or and another movie on the list, same thing with like 500 Days of Summer. Like if you get that like, oh, this was a nerd that like went through some stuff and now I like sympathize with this guy, you probably missed the point of the movie. So Fight Club, you were not supposed to like sympathize with the character,
but people do
in Fight Club.
Like sometimes,
I agree with you. People do, but
most misinterpreted film, especially with young men, it's exactly. Unbelievable.
I gotta rewatch. It's not even because,
and the thing
it's,
is,
it's like, pretty on the nose. Like I watched Fight Club when I was like fucking 14, and I got it. I was like, oh, I get this. Anyway, but my thing with Whiplash is that I don't see that at all. Like, so I actually resonated with it from a perspective of like somebody who was willing to give up something that was potentially good for himself
in order to get past it.
In order, yeah, like giving up something that was temporary in order to be like the best version of yourself in like your chosen field and craft was something that resonated with me, because I didn't see it as a nerd to stud transformation. I thought he was a nerd all the way through the movie. Like I don't think he ever became a stud at any point during that movie. I think that he was a nerd that said like, I'm going to choose my nerd shit to be really good at my nerd shit instead of like this relationship that I got. And I remember thinking about how I should like go harder in like whatever it was I was doing at the time, math or what the fuck ever, you know, and just like,
see, but that does sound vaguely a little like I don't think we disagree. Like when I said nerd to stud or whatever, I wasn't necessarily saying like, you know, it's wanted where he's a dork and then he becomes a serial killer or an assassin or whatever. It's more like he goes from being disconnected and unconfident in whatever he's doing. Because you say he went from nerd to nerd, but he went from nerd to like alpha nerd, because by the end of it, he's like going toe to toe, like screaming back at this, like what was previously an incredibly intimidating teacher. Like that dinner scene where all of his like his put upon father and like the jock cousins or whatever are all sitting at that dinner table. And previously he was the guy who somebody bumped into him and he said sorry. But now he's so in his nerd energy about, I'm going to be one of the greatest jazz musicians of all time. People are going to remember my name and they're never going to speak about any of you all.
So
past now, it was about dominance. Like that's what that whole scene was about.
But even that, like from a nerd perspective, it's like I think about how like a stud would actually handle that perspective, and like how he handled it like a nerd. He handled it like Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network. He handled it like a nerd. Like an investment banker, like a D1 football quarterback who becomes like an investment banker is like the stereotypical like 80s stud kind of person would have like shut them down and fucking like finished his steak, and they would have just like sat around in silence. And like he handled it in very much like a D&D dungeon master. Like I'm crying and I'm like yelling at you. I'm gonna be the greatest.
Well, actually, guys,
ever. Yeah, like he. Everything about it was nerdy, and I'm saying that as a nerd. Like I am a nerd. I know what nerd looks like when I see it. So, you know, it just didn't strike me as that.
This sounds to me like this. Like the common trope is this person is actually just standing up for themselves, and I think that's what people actually really relate to, which is someone who's like you said being put upon, and then you finally get to a point where you're actually just able to stand up for yourself. Fuck if you're being a nerd or you're being some alpha shit. It's just like a person that's standing up for themselves. That's
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that's what the appeal is, but I think that the problem is that it's like, that's the appeal, that's what it's supposed to be, but the danger is, and that's why I call them like these toxic soft boy movies. It's like...
Well, that's just... insulting in and of itself. Now, that's why I call them these toxic bitch-ass soft boy movies.
Because even the fantasy of what you're talking about, Alvin, it's like, you've got this guy who, through nerddom, finds confidence and maybe stands up for himself, but in all of these movies they go beyond that and they become a dominator through whatever their nerdiness is. So like they're not too much different from the jock or the stud, as you said. So it's the same thing as Fight Club. At the end of the movie, he's a piece of shit to his girlfriend, he's terrible to his family members, he cuts off everything in his life to do this thing, he becomes verbally abusive, yes, in a very nerdy way, but it's the same thing just in a different flavor.
So and I'm gonna ask Mac this, because I think Mac and I know Eddie hasn't seen this movie, but Mac, you're a movie guy. Josh, you're a movie art sports guy. Varsity Blues is a better example of what you're talking about. Varsity Blues is what you just described.
Yes,
that's what you just described. I think you should watch Varsity Blues and you'll be like, okay, now that's what I'm talking about.
There's this weird... that's the thing I think with a lot of young men, and this, like, so for example, I think Social Network is the best, because I think movies like Fight Club and Whiplash, they're pretty clear, explicit about what they're about. I think Social Network's the best, because Social Network is explicitly a movie about Mark Zuckerberg, who he wants to be popular, he wants to be well-liked. And at the end of the movie, he goes through all this shit, he burns every bridge he had, and he has this billion-dollar business, and you think it's awesome, but the irony is that everyone fucking hates him. And the whole point of the movie was that you had like a really that was the most unrealistic part of the movie for me, is that when he's dating Rooney Mara in the opening scene, I'm like, bro, how did you land this chick? Like, what the fuck?
I thought she was pretty dorky, honestly. Like that mostly.
Yeah, but she was like hot dorky. I was still like,
it's Jesse Eisenberg. Like he's much hotter than what Mark Zuckerberg looks like in real life. Okay, like he's a relatively attractive man.
I thought you were going to say something completely
different. What did you think I was going to say?
So I thought you were going to say he's a much hotter person than like Rooney Mara was in like that movie. I was like, no.
I think they're about the same. Like I think she's like maybe a point and a half.
She's pretty.
A point and a half is a lot, man. That's like it's like a Richter scale, bro. Like you know what I mean? It's not like
it's logarithmic. Yes, but like I feel like that's like he's a nerdy like 6. And she's like a nerdy 7. Like they're about like I've seen that couple a trillion times. Like yeah. I've seen so many people like that's who she would date.
True.
Yeah. Well, that goes against the whole red pill thing. It's like women date up. It's like, dude, have you seen some of the dudes that like these like hot ass chicks are dating?
I think we're underestimating how hot Jesse Eisenberg is. I know it's like it sounds like I'm like riding this dude's dick, but like most nerds aren't as handsome as what he is.
Let's also be real, man. He was a computer science major at Harvard.
Exactly. And, like, she was also at Harvard. Like, it's like
she was at BU. That was the whole.
Oh,
that was the whole
right, right, right. You're right. You're right. Okay.
She didn't.
Which
have
is also a good school, by the way.
She didn't have to study because she went to BU.
BU is a good fucking school for our international like audience as well. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like she went to fucking DeVry.
Well, so yeah, so the whole
shout
point
out to DeVry too. Sorry for DeVry.
Let's go.
Amherst, nigga.
See, I think Social Network is a good example because it's very explicit in what it's trying to say. That in Mark's attempt to try and be like the guy he wants to be, he ends up becoming like it's like, oh, on the surface, oh man, you have billions of dollars, but like your best friend fucking hates you. The girl who liked you, like, she fucking hates your guts. You have no one really likes you. Everyone thinks you're a scumbag. And that was kind of the irony of the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the point of the movie is, like, or at least the message is, like, hey, you don't have to be this, like, billionaire, like, master, super bro to, like, have good things in your life. But what's really sad is that I think a lot of young guys, and this kind of goes back to, like, the whole Andrew Tate, you know, vibe of, like, self-improvement, a lot of guys will watch The Social Network and be like, oh yeah, man, he had to do all that to like reach the heights and be, it's like, oh yeah, what he did to Eduardo was like totally necessary. You have to do that to achieve greatness. And even Whiplash, where it was like, oh yeah, man, you have to go through all that hell to, in order to be good.
To become a monster. That's like so much of the Peter, like, it's like, it's all about, you got to become a beast. I can't help myself but find it appealing, which is why I think I relate to this problem, because I look at The Social Network, I look at Whiplash, and I'm like, I understand why people are like, wow, this person, the same thing that Alvin experienced, like, this guy decided what the fuck he was going to do and just went through hell and pain to get to it. There's something very romantic about that, which is, I think, the danger.
I think that's it. It's very romantic. But the issue is that, and I think I can speak for, I'm 30 myself, but even like I'm getting to the point where I think I did kind of have like that drive where that was very attractive when I was a younger man. But now I'm starting to realize just how much, or just how shallow it is, or just how much more important my relationship with my girlfriend and my family is.
You also have a ton of examples of the guy that like could have did XYZ and like said, fuck it, I'm going to go see about a girl, to paraphrase the end of Good Will Hunting. You know what I mean? Like that whole movie was a love story. It was, and like, again, I love that movie.
Yes.
Again, Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
And I'm not joking when I say this, and I won't get into it because it'll get boring as fuck. But like, Good Will Hunting literally changed my life. Like,
I can see that.
I cut
because you are Good Will Hunting, bro.
Like, I cut Good Will Hunting off. I cut Good Will Hunting off, and I changed the entire trajectory of my life in about 6 hours. Like, I'm not like I'm not fucking joking. But
that's what good movies do. Yeah.
But that whole story was literally him saying, like, I could have been XYZ, and I was like, fuck it. I'm finna go chase, you know, Mini Driver across the country or whatever. Or like, again, Varsity Blues, like, James Vanderbeek's character was like, you know, I'm getting ready to go to Brown. I'm riding the bench. You know, I'm a quarterback. Like, everybody wants me to do this kind of stuff. Like, I'm going to traverse this thing, remain myself, get the girl, still go to Brown. You know, like, I think we over-index on some of the movies. And when I say we, I mean, like, the culture that finds that resonance and the romanticized.
I think Good Will Hunting is a rarity, like a real rarity. Because what you just described, I hadn't really realized, because I love that movie. But yeah, I love that movie. But Good Will Hunting is one of the only movies where a male character's greatness is celebrated for being set aside in service of building community and closeness. Because that movie done anywhere else would be about how he eventually became a great mathematician.
Great set.
But that's not what the movie's about. The movie is about him going, like, what am I? It's all about him getting through his trauma, his relationship with Robin Williams, the closeness and love that he has for his friends, and then choosing to let someone get truly close to him, despite the fact that this motherfucker basically has superpowers. Like, it's like us watching Spider-Man, and at the end of the movie, he goes, I don't give a fuck about this Spider-Man shit. I'm always late for my anniversary.
Say,
this shit is dumb.
Hey,
I'm going to choose life.
You also just described The Dark Knight Rises too. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
But he comes, but he rises.
He did. No, the end of the movie, the end of the movie was him running out with Selena Kyle.
He was 50.
He was fucking 45. Batman was old when he started, bro. He started this shit. He started being Batman.
But he finished being Batman. He did all the Batman shit.
He could have still been Batman. You never seen Batman Beyond? The motherfucker had a suit.
Well, I think, So, Eddie, you put it, you
cutting edge dick.
This was like, it was beautifully put. I think that's the issue with a lot of these movies, where even if the message is like, you know, doing all this is going to fuck up your life, or like striving too hard for this goal is like going to destroy your relationships, at the end of the movie, it still almost kind of frames it as if it was kind of like worth it.
You
in
should
a way.
Do this. Right.
Yeah.
You should, you should make this sacrifice.
And that's the issue. And that's the issue, because when I, again, going back to like, I fucking hate mentioning it, but like the whole Andrew Tate thing, people will bring up, it's like, well, Andrew Tate says that like his dream is to like, you know, have a good woman and like have kids and have a wonderful relationship. But then you look at like, you look at his shorts and you look at his content, it's Bugattis and mansions and hoes. And that's the issue with
and
so
sex
many
trafficking.
And sex trafficking.
And sex trafficking.
And cam girls.
Physical abuse, yep.
And that's the issue with young guys, is they're, instead of like, and it's so ironic because a lot of these red pill dudes will talk about that with women. It's like, you know, women, you don't want to have like a six figure career. You know, it's, what's important is having a family and children. But here, but the thing is what's ironic is I actually think they're right for the wrong reason. I think that like
that men actually also want this.
Exactly. It's like, I hate when like Jordan Peterson talks about that. It's like, why would any woman want to like work 80 hour weeks and like not
why
see your
you?
Kids and not, it, yeah. Why would anyone, that sounds awful. But guys, yeah. It's like, yeah, they romanticize. Yeah, man, I can't wait to work 100 hour weeks so I can grind and never see my kids and never have a girlfriend and never see my family. And I'm like, that sounds like the, and again, I think, what's really sad is a lot of guys don't kind of find that out till later in life, and they kind of almost have to play catch up because they don't have social skills. They've kind of alienated a lot of their friends and families, any, you know, potential women who they could have had relationships with, because, oh, I'm on that grind. And then they like they make all this money, they're in the place they want to be, and they realize they're miserable because they don't have anything really a substance.
You don't have a life. You don't have anything at all. You have achievement. You've like rocketed to the, maybe though most won't, like most of y'all won't ever become millionaires or billionaires or any of that, but having like a strong community is actually low-key a lot more achievable in terms of like how many of us can actually get there.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask you something, Alvin, like how do you reconcile, because just the way you broke down Good Will Hunting and Whiplash, to me they have almost opposite messages and feelings to them, because Whiplash ends with him getting the approval for having getting the approval from this like dangerous patriarchal character after having sacrificed all of his life in order to be great, whereas Good Will Hunting goes the opposite direction. He has this much softer, gentler patriarchal character who gives him permission to be close to another person and to not focus on how incredible of a science or a mathematician he is, and goes, I gotta go see about a girl. How do you reconcile those two life-changing movies when they're, like, I think, almost opposites?
Yeah, so I also think that, for me, one, I saw those movies in two completely different spaces in my life.
Yeah, that's what I'm like wondering. So I'm like, how
like
did,
I, like I didn't,
what
like
was
I didn't
the arc?
See, I'm not talking about, Good Will Hunting didn't change my life when it dropped when I was fucking six or whatever. I don't know when Good Will Hunting came out. I saw that much later.
90s or something, yeah. But
yeah, it was definitely, young, like, mid to late 90s. Like, this was, like, early Ben Affleck, early Matt Damon.
That was the first one to put them on the map. Crazy first project.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Straight out the gate.
Oscar for best screenplay.
Lucky bastards.
Like 22.
I know. Like, yeah, fucking lucky motherfuckers. Anyway.
Nah, it sucks to start at the top, though.
No, but so the way I looked at Whiplash wasn't that like this was something that like changed the trajectory of his life. I thought that he was just like a person that like worked through a situation and like beat his villain. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, I didn't see this as like,
that's how you would interpret it.
Yeah,
he won finally.
Yeah, it looked to me like he was like playing a cat and mouse with like J.K. Simmons, and like at the end won. Like, I didn't see this as something that completely changed the trajectory of his life. I view Good Will Hunting as somebody making a life changing decision. Mm-hmm. Like, I view those two movies as, I can definitely see them being like 100% like, you know, linked. Like, there's a correlation there, but I don't see them as opposites.
Because it still seems like when you talk about trajectory, when I think about Whiplash and that last scene is the end result of how he's chosen to live his life. So when I'm thinking about, okay, well, how do I as a man lead my life? It's like, do I sacrifice everything to be great, or do I sacrifice greatness in order to be connected? And the two movies have different questions. So when I look at Whiplash, it was very much like a trajectory decision that he goes,
I'm going to get
back on stage with this person.
Yeah. And for me, go ahead, man.
Oh, I think just to Alvin's point, I think the difference, and this kind of relates to Fight Club too, I think the difference as to why Whiplash's ending works is because throughout the entire film, he's basically, in order to view himself as great, he needs the approval of J.K. Simmons, his teacher. Yeah. In the final scene, it's when he finally says, fuck you, I know I'm great. I don't care about your approval. Because remember, it's that scene where he walks off stage humiliated, but then he walks mm-hmm. back on stage and he like mouths like, fuck you. It's in that moment that he reaches this like, and kind of like Fight Club too, where the entire movie, the narrator is like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm trying to be my own man. But in reality, he's actually playing a part of Tyler Durden. He's still like looking up to like a daddy figure. Like he thinks he's being his own man, but he's still following in the footsteps of this other person. It's only at the very end.
I still
end,
feel like what Whiplash was like though.
Well, that's it. But then at the very end of Fight Club, it's when he finally says, fuck you, Tyler. I'm going to go my own way. That's when, and we don't exactly, I think for you, Eddie, I think the difference is with Fight Club, it works because he's like at rock bottom, but he's free. It's like he has nothing left in his life, but now he can start anew as his own man. I think the conflict in Whiplash, and I do agree with this to some extent, is the movie saying that it was finally him sort of usurping J.K. Simmons that led to him being great? Or is the movie saying that it was J.K. Simmons being so hard on him throughout the entire film, that is what resulted in him. He had to push him in order to make himself
That's
great.
A very good point.
So I know, I see what you're saying.
They asked that
I
in the movie.
Think,
you know?
Yeah,
I think I that's
do.
what the movie is all about. Like, in fact, it seems like those two, it's saying both of those two things. It seems like it's advertising this domination, like a
borderline abusive behavior in a way,
like an abuse based form of raising boys, like it, because this is, it really is like a father son kind of a thing, which is that like if you harm young boys, they become strong, and if they become strong enough, they become great like you, and if they become great like you, then they're capable of enacting violence on the next generation to make them great. And the movie ends with him coming back tougher, saying fuck you to his dad character, and showing that through all of this pain that he was put through, he became so great that he's now perfect and he can say fuck you, but it ultimately was about them exchanging that smile of
the nod
but, was like, I'm finally big enough to beat you, thank you for making me great. It's like, yeah, what the fuck kind of lesson is this?
I also think that there are lessons in there that don't even extend past those moments, which is why I see like Good Will Hunting and Whiplash as a different moment. So I'm going to keep making sports movie references anyway. So in The Replacements, right?
I'll use context clues.
Yeah. So there it's, you know, The Replacements, Keanu Reeves, one of my favorite football movies, by the way, overall sports like movies, like period. Movie. Okay. So it's a player strike and they get all of these like washed up, you know, former pro like washouts, you know, sometimes like some collegiate players that didn't quite make it, and they come on as replacement players and they try to like salvage a season. So there's this final game where, like, you know, Keanu Reeves has had these ups and downs as a player. You know, he's doubting himself, he's doubting his confidence. He comes back, wins his confidence, they win this final game. They know nothing will ever happen after this. Like, the players like sign a bargaining agreement, everybody comes back, they play a regular fucking postseason like nothing ever happened. And then Gene Hackman does this voiceover speech where he's like, even if nothing ever comes from this, you know, they had a moment of greatness and greatness sticks with you. So what I view in those situations, like in Whiplash, I don't even necessarily think that anything happened past that point. Like, he could have like became like a fucking, you know, accountant after that. But I think that perspective, I appreciate the fact that he sacrificed what he needed to do to like beat his demon. And I think that the demon was, I think J.K. Simmons's character was more of a metaphor for internal demons that he had to pass to do that. And I don't necessarily think that he had to like become like the world's greatest jazz musician for that story to have resonance. I think he could have just beat that individual person, which was a representative of something else, and it can still be like a phenomenal story, and it doesn't have to be in opposition of anything else.
Because sometimes I feel like the need to like win is antithetical to actually being happy. Like, the fact that he needed to beat that character instead of just being like, actually, no, I think maybe it'd be nice if I could just form like a nice relationship and be an okay musician and do this. But it's like, no, the way that I get access to this being a correct ending is that I have to beat this thing, this person.
I think it's allegorical, man, which is why I think Fight Club does it well, okay. Right? Because Fight Club gives you like, Fight Club demystifies that aspect of it, right? Where you know that this wasn't a real thing. You know what I mean? Like, you know that this was like something else. So I think
in his own head.
Yeah, I think that it's allegorical, and I think that J.K. Simmons was just a personification of that.
It's just so funny, though, how even today Fight Club is still horribly misinterpreted, or how the way the film still emulate and glorify Tyler Durden as a character, when the entire point of the film was that he was a sort of false god, a false idol that the narrator had to see past in order to become his own man. And yet I still see like Sigma Male edits of like Tyler Durden, man. I'm like, oh my god, what the fuck?
You can't make a character too hot. People will just if you make a character cool, it doesn't matter how much they were the bad guy. People are going to be like, oh, American Psycho. Oh, shit, fucking Joe issue. Goldberg. Like, it's just...
They see the six-pack. They see the fuck God. They see the... They're still stuck in, like, the narrator phase. They're still stuck in the, I want to be Tyler Durden. It's like, no. The entire point of the movie is fuck Tyler Durden. Be your own man. Yeah. But a lot of guys are still stuck in that mode.
And even media that go out of their way to show you that this guy that you're idolizing is a horrible person. So I'm thinking like, so my best examples are Mad Men and Rick and Morty. Like in Mad Men and Rick and Morty, the writers go out of their way to say, you should not idolize this person. This person is horrible. We're doing this for entertainment person. Rick Sanchez is horrible. Don Draper is a horrible person, and people are like, oh my god, I just can't, you know, Rick Sanchez,
this guy is so fucking cool, holy shit, with the whiskey and the scotch. I think it's
Don Draper the greatest.
I think it's an impossible task, because you can't make people hate your protagonist and watch your movie. I don't think it's possible to even tell a story that way and achieve what you're trying to.
Well, the issue particularly like with Mad Men, that's like a perfect example, because the entire point of Mad Men is that Don Draper, well, that's the whole, you know, spoilers for Mad Men, it's been out for a while.
Yeah, fucking years later.
Yeah, and you find this out in like the fourth episode.
Say that. You can't just, who watches everything this 12 years? Sorry, go ahead.
I know you just start watching Fringe. I know, I get it.
I started rewatching. I've seen it before, but okay, great, I mean, great. Okay, I'm not going to get on that.
We're going to talk about that afterwards. I love that show. Anyway, go ahead.
So like, you know, because you find this out in like the fourth episode, but the entire irony of the show is that Don Draper isn't even his real name, the character. The entire persona that he's built of like this like suave, handsome, talking, you know, ad man who gets everything he wants, he fucking hates it because he knows in his heart that it's not really him.
It's not who he is. Yeah.
And the entire point of, and it's again, it's like even as the show goes on, he cheats on his wife, he lies to his friends, he holds people to standards, but doesn't meet. Yeah. Yeah, or he holds people to standards but doesn't meet them himself. So he isn't even doing a good job of being the masculine archetype that he's trying to be. But all young dudes see is like, whoa, man, he fucked that chick. Yeah, he fucked that chick in like episode 5.
Because we like bad people. Like, we like when people are bad, but they have, because it's like, who the fuck is watching Mad Men if this motherfucker is just a very healthy ad creative? Like, that's the boring. That's a dumb show. Nobody wants to watch that.
I'm saying so I can watch shows like about villains and I can watch shows about villains and like be like, okay, that's a villain show. Like, I don't like, for example, like the Joker. I don't.
Scale.
Yeah, agreed.
But big scale, like, awesome. I agree, an individual can, but I don't think that you can make a movie where you go, this character is so interesting and so hot, and you're so gonna want to watch them be bad for like 2 hours every week. They're bad. Well, can you think of a time that that's ever been done where the main character was bad and people don't romanticize them heavily?
The Adam Sandler shit. The Adam Sandler Click? Shit.
Oh, Uncut Gems?
Yeah, Uncut Gems.
That movie.
That was a good one. But yeah, I think he was a loser the whole movie, though. Like, nobody...
Fair. Okay, fair.
Like, the point of the movie was that he was a loser. So there was never a point where... Except he did have a relatively hot girlfriend, but even that was unsure whether or not she even liked him.
Yeah,
so
that was also her insanity.
He was just
cut that out.
Temporary example was Breaking Bad, where at least from my view, is a story about a bad man. The more I rewatch Breaking Bad, the more I realize that the character of Walter White, he was a bastard from the very beginning. He was like a bitter, angry, small man who just wanted to feel strong, who just wanted to feel big for once in his life. And eventually he just completely destroyed his life, his family's life, everything around him. And that's kind of like why I don't like the ending of Breaking Bad, because I don't think it kind of drives that home. But yeah, so the more I watch it, I just despise the character. I understand him. I understand why he's doing what he's doing. But he's really a despicable character. But it's kind of concerning when even today you'll have fans who are still kind of like on Team Walter. Yeah.
I gotta rewatch that show because I hated her way too much watching that show. I was like, this bitch don't want her husband to be a murderous drug dealer selling meth.
I fucking hate Walter White's character. I say this shit all the time. Like,
I remember thinking, yeah.
I know what you're gonna say, Eddie, to what I'm about to say, but I'm finna inject some realism to this shit. This motherfucker had like graduate level education from a college that was probably Caltech. Who don't know, like, Caltech is like the shit. You go to Caltech and you get any fucking degree, like, you're a fucking genius motherfucker. He had business experience from this gray matter shit. This motherfucker could have done anything other than that, and he's like, we're supposed to feel sorry for him because he elected to be a high school teacher. You could have fucking as a chemistry, you could have been working for fucking Shell or like fucking like ConocoPhillips and making like fucking $500,000 a year, and like, I'm supposed to feel sorry for you because you made a decision.
What happened there?
I don't know how
did he end up there?
Because the core premise of the show doesn't make sense. And the only backstory you get on how he ended up there was the gray matter shit that you got in like bits and pieces.
That's a perfect question, Alvin. When you think about it, like, this was not a person. He had like a lot of education. He had he got kicked out of gray matter, but there's no reason he couldn't have done 50 other things.
Even getting kicked out of gray matter would have helped him get the next thing. He could have been the founding member of gray matter.
Yeah, he could have been the next venture capital, like, darling, in some other venture. Like, I don't get it.
And I think
the Winklevoss twins are fine. Like,
and I think that's when you rewatch the show, that's something that sticks out to you more. Where when you first watch it, you're like, oh, this poor guy, you know, he ended up here, he had no choice.
Right.
But then when you rewatch it, you're like, no, hang on, you gave up. At some point in your life, you became so embittered about your situation.
That?
You had this victim mentality of... Because even throughout the show, he keeps saying in his head, he was like, I was forced out of gray matter by my partners. But then later in the series, he flat out says, no, I left. Mm-hmm. And that is a hint right there that like, oh...
Like he threw a tantrum because he wasn't getting what he wanted kind of energy.
You have this... He has this victim mentality of he has to sort of like... make his life worse. These are characters who perpetually keep themselves in like a miserable state. Oh, another character like that is House from
Yes.
A character who keeps themselves miserable because they think it makes them special, or like it's they enjoy that victim mentality. When in reality they could do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. But
again with House, like, and with Rick and Morty, I think Rick and Morty is much better written than House. And I'm saying it as a person who thinks House is a B plus show because it tapers
that Massive
off.
Attack song is
yeah, but
it's still so, in my rotation.
Right. So Rick and Morty is much better written, so they do it more tactfully. But both of those shows go out of their way to say like, you are not supposed to like this character. This character is horrible. Please don't like this character. And everybody's like, oh my God, I wish I could be Dr. House.
House seemed much more redeemable from what I recall. Like
He did nice shit, but it was from a narcissistic place. It was a God complex, nice situation.
It seemed like they were constantly trying to convince us that like, I don't know if I agree with what you just said, because I feel like both Rick and Morty and House, the underlying premise is always like, but secretly he's actually nice and good. Like that the character is constantly fighting against, like, somewhere in the back of their head is this like nice person who wants to do kind things for good reasons, but is constantly pretending to be an asshole.
Nah, bro.
I feel like both of those shows have a ton of that.
Let me break down my favorite scene of House. My favorite scene. Okay. Spoiler alert.
Let's go. Let me see. If I
Dames Earl Jones plays an African dictator. He's ill. He gets shipped to Plainsboro. Yeah.
Was this the fucking Coming to America house crossover?
No, it was not a Coming to America house crossover. It was very dark because, again, he was an African dictator who was like murdering people. It was an extremely dark episode.
Yeah, I know that it obviously wasn't a crossover. I'm just saying he also. All right. Well,
yes, I'm aware of Coming to America, but he's going through an emergency like surgery, and you find out that Chase like let this motherfucker die. He was like, he's a bad person. I'm gonna let him die on the table, and it slowly devolves into this situation where Cameron, like, he talks to Cameron because at this point they're married. Spoiler alert. But anyway, so
which two characters are this?
The white doctors from the original cast.
Wait, the two boys were married?
No, Cameron's a chick.
Yeah, Cameron's she's the one from like Once Upon a Time.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she's pretty bad. She's good.
Yeah. So she finds out about it, right? And you know, they talk through it, and she's not even mad at him. And Chase is given another surgery, and House comes in, and he's like, you know, your wife doesn't even see you as a man. The only person that she sees in her life that's a real man is me. And she's like, doesn't even blame you for this because she thinks that everything that you do is something that I allow and that I control. So she doesn't hate you for killing him. She hates me. So like, he literally has to go back to his wife after House tells him that and say like, I killed this man. House didn't kill him. I'm a killer. So like, how is somebody that's putting two people through that level of hell and destroying their marriage ever supposed to be like a good person? He's not. He's a bastard. He's horrible. And that was phenomenal television. Like, he did this shit over a body that they're operating on.
Bro, so I think this is the thing with House, and this is why I like the, because it kind of goes back to what you were talking, Eddie, about Whiplash. There's this sort of idea in a lot of this media where it's like, oh, in order to be a genius, you have to sacrifice, like, sometimes you have to be a bastard, you have to do bad things. What I really loved about House was that it drove home the point that, House, you are brilliant. You're smart. You have the potential to help all these people. None of that requires you to be a bastard. You're just, it's almost like House convinces himself that, like, in order to have this gift and help people, I have to push people away and be mean. But I think the show goes, at least in like the first season, what the show was trying to say was that he doesn't, House, you can be a genius and a nice guy who has relationships. You're pushing these people away just because you're an asshole. You're just miserable and you just want other people to be miserable. It's not like a give and take sort of thing. The difference with House is that the kind of, what was so ironic about the show was that, yeah, House kind of frames it as if, well, I need to be an asshole to be a genius. When what the show was saying, at least in like the first season, was, no, you're a genius. You're just choosing to be an asshole and it's ruining your life and you should stop. I think the show, if it kind of like, funny enough, because I did a video on this a while back. I did a video on the Daniel Craig James Bond. But what I found was interesting, kind of to your point, Eddie, about, you know, this sort of character. In order to be this like assassin, in order to be good at his job, he has to be someone who does not trust anyone. He needs to be someone who is completely cut off, completely cold, cutthroat, no connections to anyone. However, particularly in Casino Royale, what the film also, and this is like where the conflict is, what the film also shows us is that if it weren't for the people close to him, whether it's Eva Green or Q or M, if it weren't for these people who he trusts with his life, he would be dead. So it's like this weird tension between, in order to be good at my job, I need to cut connection completely and be this completely free agent, cutthroat, no emotional attachments. However, on the other hand, if I don't have those emotional attachments, I'm nothing.
So at the end of like Casino Royale, they were pretty sure Mathis was in on it and he was tortured. And he goes back and gets help from Mathis, and then Mathis is like later assassinated. And then he has that point where he's dying and he says, don't leave me. And Daniel Craig holds him, like literally holds the guy until he dies. He also then throws the body in the trash can and he's like, he wouldn't care because Mathis wouldn't have cared. That character was all about the op. But he very clearly was able to express, even in front of other people, like having intimate relationships on a friend basis. Like, he had friends. He had people that everybody knew he cared about. His hang up was romantic relationships. So I think they put that in a special box. And I think that's interesting now that you mention it.
To something that you just said before, do y'all feel like men take on board that idea of romance as being something that is, that there's honor in it being beyond, outside of your reach? Because what you just described comes up a lot in movies of like, I can't be with you. Like, yeah, I have friends. Yeah, I have missions. Yeah, I have a community, but I can't love you because I'm a spy. I'm Batman, whatever. I'm Spider-Man.
Is that, I think a lot of guys end up romanticizing this idea in their life that like, oh, you know, I'm working towards something great so I can't be in a relationship. But in reality, a lot of these guys don't have any relationship prospects whatsoever. And they aren't actually, I know that sounds harsh.
The problem wasn't your drumming career, bro. Nobody wanted you anyway.
Because I've seen this a lot in like the red pill, black pill space, where a lot of these guys will say like, you know, yeah, I'm saving myself for marriage. Like, I'm saving my purity. But in all honesty, it's like the elephant in the room is like, do you really mean that? Or are you just saying it because you're kind of coping because you don't have any romantic?
You can't fire me, I quit. So that's interesting. So are you saying that you think that people relate to that kind of portrayal of masculinity because it gives them a way to go, okay, so I already don't get bitches. What kind of story can I tell around this that feels like it brings meaning to it? I'm actually in the same vein as Sherlock Holmes and House and Spider-Man. I'm doing something great, so there's no space for a female partner in my life.
Basically, they think they're doing something very selfless and like grand, like they're choosing duty over romance. Like there's some sort of like beautiful suffering in their life, when in reality, yeah, they're just kind of depressed. Yeah, man, I'm pushing away all my friends and any romantic interest in my family, so I'm grinding in the gym every day. But it's like, what are you building to? To like what works 80 hours at a job that like makes you miserable? Like, what is that? Because again, like in all these movies,
okay.
Like if we're talking about Spider-Man, this idea of like you're being New York's savior, it is something that is at least somewhat admirable.
But they're just going to the gym.
Or they're just like working jobs that make them miserable. Or they're just like really,
they so have like suffering as a placeholder for meaning kind of a thing. Is that what you're getting at? Or
basically no. Their life sucks. And instead of trying to fix it, they're almost like gaslighting themselves into believing that actually there is a meaning to my life sucking. And there is a meaning to the suffering I'm going through. But in reality, there really isn't. And then like 5 years later, they realize that they are in the exact same spot that they were. Thing that we can all, that's part of life. But it seems like for a lot of guys I see, they're like, they think that they're doing something grand in their life. When it's like, dude, you'd probably be happier if you got some friends and you found a nice girl just to kind of settle down with, to be honest. Like, there's no reason you can't have friends and go to the gym. Or you can't like work on your side hustle and also like have a girlfriend.
I think though that that's actually a lot harder than like the instruction manual to get to like hit gains is actually a lot fucking easier than building like really deep friendships in adulthood. Like one is way fucking harder and there's like no instruction manual. There's tons and tons of TikTok clips on should you do barbells or bench press or whatever the fuck.
There's so much TikTok information on.
there's almost too much.
Because that's where people go to get shit. Like, if you're going, there's a constant stream of information. Where am I going to go? Oh, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could try this. It's going to be a stream of 60-second clips.
The reason I'm laughing at you is because you can find. Oh. I say you can find an equally big TikTok cache of like information trying to solve the other problem. And I think that a lot of what we're talking about is the fact that like. I'm pretty sure.
But go ahead. But
I think it's bad information. I think that like what's proliferated now is people in that like red pill like sphere and their echo chamber.
Maybe you're talking about dating. I don't see any male targeted information that's about how to be better best buddies with your best buddy.
Oh, that's
definitely not anywhere close to in volume of. Okay,
that's fair. When you said intimate relationships, I immediately went to that. But you didn't say that. No, but you didn't say that. You didn't say that. I'm thinking back now. Like you're
because I'm thinking friendships. There's no friendship content for anyone.
Yeah.
But even more so for guys. There's some female friendship content, but even that's like few and far between.
Because unless it's done in like a jokey way, most people are afraid it'll come off as like gay.
Yeah,
it's really fucked
absolutely.
Up. I've even seen guys saying like, "You don't hug your best bros, you fist bump them." Or it's like, as like shitty as that is, and it's funny too, because you'll see it a lot of, like, you know, bromance and stuff. The only way men can sort of express that sort of intimacy is either in, like, a very joking manner, kind of like, you know, like bromance movies and stuff like that. It's almost always played for humor. It's never like, it's kind of sincere, but it's always laced with a lot of humor. Like, it's supposed to be funny.
That is a bit ridiculous. This is a bit, you know.
Yeah.
There's no, like, sister. There's no, like, brotherhood of the traveling trousers or whatever. Like, we don't have that type of shit.
I mean, unless. I'm not sharing your pants, but, like, we can get, like, brotherhoods of, like, the traveling rollies or something. Brotherhoods of the traveling Hublots.
I mean, that was kind of gross that they were all wearing the same pants, but.
Yeah.
What's ironic, though, is that. So, yeah, it's either. Because, again, if it was just, like, a movie about, like, just two guys who were, like, very close, intimate friends, most people would think it's, like, so are they supposed to be gay or something? The only circumstance where it seems like that is permissible isn't something like a war movie.
Or like a gangster film, like, if it's, like, The Town.
Yes.
Like, where, like, they're also killing people.
It's very...
you
it
have to be
to
killing
be.
People. You have to be beating people up. Even with Good Will Hunting, it was the same thing.
Yeah, they were, like, beating people up. You know, like, it was... Yeah, like, we're like this bros, we're really close, like, but we fight people.
Sticks up for these.
I will say, I do think
where Robin Williams is going, like, the reason he sticks up for these guys is because any of them would take a baseball bat to you, like, if he just said the word. And it's like, that was meant to be the, oh, that's male friendship. Yeah. That's what that was supposed to give us, you know?
I do think Good Will Hunting, especially towards the end, like, there's that great scene where, you know, Chucky tells Will that, like, look, man, I fucking love you and I want what's best for you. Like, that was a very touching scene.
Yeah.
And something that I don't think
when I come in here. You will not come in the next morning, you know, that's
what you
dream.
Be going,
very genuine, very sincere. But then, like, yeah, if something like The Town, like Jeremy Renner and Ben Affleck's character, they're very close friends, they love each other, but it's sort of
never speak it.
Or it's sort of like meshed in with, like, this idea of, like, honor or sort of, like, you know, blood oath. Like, it's still coded in this very masculine, hyper masculine area.
There's the one scene where, like, where Ben Affleck's character gets Jeremy Renner's character, and they go and beat up the guys who were talking to his love interest, and he pulls off his mask and he gives him that speech. He was like, this is my brother, you know, like, you know, he was like, you seen my face, but I know what you look like. Like, so we can do this. Like, you can come see me wherever. So, like, it was that sort of scene where he kind of described, like, what he meant to him. But again, they had to put it in the context of, like, they're beating the shit out of people.
Yes.
To even be able to express love.
Mm. Or even that, like, that language of, like, my brother, like, my brother in arms. Like, there's always this, like, very hyper masculine coding of an intimate relationship, because if that's not present, people will just perceive it as, like, homoerotic. Which is really
fucked
up.
That's what the whole culture is, yeah.
It's
the whole culture is built around, like, because me and Josh had this conversation about, like, male platonic friendships and shit like that, where it's just like, oh, no one really has, like, a proper framework for what it is for men to have that friendship level. Like, because The Man Enough podcast, Liz Plank said this, like, so brilliantly. She was like, we have this concept of the bromance and bromance movies where it's like, it's a bit funny. It's a bit, oh my God, these two grown men who are, like, best buddies. Like, isn't that so silly? And there's no equivalent female term because we just call that friendship.
Yeah.
Like, that's just you being friends. That's what you're supposed to do. There's no reason to make a new portmanteau word of, like, this silly little weird, you know, man child activity that you're doing, because you're just friends. Of course you would do these things. Of course you would love this person and be close to them, you know?
Yeah, but I think that also extends to, like, how they even do stuff like period for men, right? Like, that is, like, quote unquote been
period.
Feminized. Like, why are men's body washes always, like, in silver and black packaging? You know what I mean? Or or, like, it has to be a man toothbrush and it's black.
That shit's so weird.
It runs on diesel.
Oh my God.
It's a man.
Your Brillo pad to exfoliate.
Black and blue and silver.
Bro, I went to Sephora. This is like 6 months ago. It was like 6 months ago. I go to Sephora with my girlfriend and I'm going through, like, the men's cologne. Like, I didn't buy anything. They had a men's cologne. It was shaped like a grenade. And, like, it was like a glass grenade. I was like, what the fuck? I think I made, like, a post about
it. I love
that
shit,
like, I can't use this cologne unless it's shaped like a grenade, so that way people won't know that I'm not a pussy.
It has to be camo. You know, it has to be camo.
Yeah.
Camo really,
I'm kind of in defense of that shit, though. Like, no, because, okay, but hold on. Because I feel like sometimes we get so, like, mad at male shit for being, like, gendered in some way, that it's, I feel like we're almost going the other direction, because it's like girl shit is girly too. Like, why can't we have some boy shit that's boyish if it doesn't have some other negative element to it? Like, what's wrong with boy themed cologne? Like, what? it's for boys.
Hey man, just put that. It's like lotion, right? Like, I don't need man lotion. I don't need girl lotion. Right. Like, my fucking Palmer's.
Just put it in a beige bottle.
Palmer's. Yeah. It's beige with a brown top. Palmer's.
Yeah.
Like,
but isn't it nice to perform? Like, I feel like gender is kind of fun. Like, men aren't supposed to say that, but I feel like everybody knows that. Like, people like doing this shit.
I think the difference is that when it comes to women, and this is something that they've talked about a lot about, like, you know, as to the rise of the red pill and all that shit and why it exists, is because women are in the space where, when it comes to sort of like gender expression, they have a lot more freedom. So, for example, a woman can wear, hey, I feel like wearing a dress today. I feel like wearing jeans and a t-shirt today.
They can wear pants. That's crazy.
They have this, and we never, and like to an, and no, like obviously.
Think about it. Up until 35.
He was like, these fucking modern women are wearing pants? No,
fucking shit. No.
That is wild, bro. Pants?
No, I'm saying. What I mean is, like, you have to think about how crazy of a transition it was from pants being exclusively men's clothing to, like, no one bats an eye at a woman wearing clothing. But it's still considered, like, very strange for a guy to wear a miniskirt.
Yeah, so I think
Like, women going from not wearing pants to wearing pants is the same move as us wearing miniskirts.
Oh, my
like,
God.
That's how crazy of a move it was.
I think that's the key, where it's, like, like, gender expression and playing with it can be fun. But the issue is that when it comes to a lot of, like, male gender expression, it does come with this sort of, like, added thing of, like, are you doing it because you like it, or are you doing it because you don't want to be perceived as being unmanly?
Agreed.
And I feel like this is a pressure that's always...
There's not freedom to get the beige bottle, too.
It's put on men all the fucking time of, like, oh, my God, I saw this... do you guys know who Roel Tomasi is, godfather of the red pill?
No.
Okay, good. Don't look him up. Basically, he's like seen as like the godfather of the red pill. He wrote The Rational Male. It was like one of the first, like the Bible of the red pill, like all that crap.
Oh, no, I've seen this guy.
Okay, yeah. There was a male Olympian. He was like 18 years old. He was a swimmer. He's a kid. He was at the Olympics. He was, I think he won a gold medal. This kid's like 18 years old. He's at the Olympics. He's ripped to shit. In between races, he would be in the stands, and he was knitting. You know, I think a lot of, like, women on, like, Twitter were like, oh, cute. Like, that's so cool. Like, that he can, you know, he's this, like, hyper athlete. He's got, like, ripped six-pack. Yeah. But also, he doesn't care about knitting. And this Roel Tomasi guy, he, like, blasted him. It's like, oh, look at what the modern man is, that this little pussy is, like, knitting.
Dude, these guys are bullshit. They're just making shit up to be mad at.
But that's, like, what's so weird of, like, you take this kid who is, like, top tier, one of the top swimmers in the world. He's, at 18 years old, he's made it to the top ranked.
Physical athletic performance.
Peak physical condition. Ripped to shit. Any chick in the world would probably fuck this kid. And just because he's knitting, all of a sudden, it just, all that shit goes out the door. And it's just so amazing how stringent. And again, I'm not saying that they, you know, gender norms are not stringent on women as well. But it's
different though. I think everybody understands what you're getting at. It's
for men. It's
women get to,
like,
wear pants. We can't wear skirts. I think that was a good point that I was making earlier.
The framing of how you said it at first is what got me, bro. You were like, they're wearing pants. That's crazy. I can't believe it.
It's pants. It is wild. It is wild.
The framing
considering
was crazy,
we can't
bro.
Wear none of their shit. They can wear a girl can wear everything that we can wear. There's nothing that's off limits for a woman to wear. We can't wear really none of the shit without someone being like, oh yeah, you're definitely you're queer. It's like, no, I just thought this looked cute. It's a cool top. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not so much that, like, the gender expression for men isn't, again, it's fun if that's what you like, if you like this or that. But I think men are awarded.
Cologne.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, if you like it, whatever. But I
Blast,
think men,
money.
We're awarded so much less wiggle room when it comes to that. It's very similar to when we see, like, a female celebrity lose weight. I think you guys remember, like, when Adele lost a shit ton of weight.
Yeah.
A while back.
Bring back Fat Adele.
Well, it's difficult.
Wait, sorry, I might have fucked up your point. Go ahead. Just go say.
Well, it's difficult because on one hand, it's like, well, if that's what she wants to do that's great. If she wanted to do it to be healthier, that's awesome.
Yes. Cool.
However, we also recognize, I hope she didn't do it because she felt pressure from the media all constantly talking about her weight. And it's like, it doesn't mean that, like, I don't think that she should lose weight. It doesn't mean that I think that, like, to your point, Eddie, I don't think that she should gain back the weight out of, like, protest to say, like, fuck beauty standards. We can't separate it from the cultural context of, hey, are they doing this because of some sort of auxiliary pressure in the media? We want her to do it for her because she wants to, not because the tabloids do. And it's kind of, that's kind of like the tightrope that we, I'm talking about with men when it comes to, if men want to be masculine, that's awesome. Like, you should have the freedom to. But I don't want men to be that way because they feel pressured to be.
Oh, if you want the grenade cologne, buy the grenade cologne. If you want,
that's an exceptional point.
Yes.
If you and look, as a matter of fact, I will say, if you're going out here and getting the grenade cologne because you feel like restricted and you must do that,
that's
you might
it.
Be waving a little bit of a red flag.
That's exactly
but
it.
At the same time, you know what I'm saying? If you see other people doing that to where they feel like they can never do anything gender wise without the approval of others, and that's what's motivating them, you might be seeing a red flag. It's been Waving the Red Flag podcast. It's been Eddie. It's been Alvin. It's been Josh. It's been Mac. Where can people find you? Tell them where they can see your stuff. You know what I'm saying? Tell them about what you do.
Oh, yeah. I'm on YouTube, Macabre Storytelling, mostly media analysis, film and TV shows, and occasionally men's issues.
Very, very exceptional video essays. Very good shit. If y'all want to see us live at the beginning of every episode and you want to join us on the Discord, you want to get bonus episodes, hop on Patreon. That's where you get the full, you know, podcast experience. Like and subscribe to this, and we'll see y'all next week. Peace. That's the show.